Greetings, fellow Earthlings. Sandra Doherty here, and I'm going to be talking to you about a few things before we start the show. First things first, thank you very much to AdamandEve.com. You can go to AdamandEve.com and type in sex nerd, and they have hooked it up with 50% off almost any item for us sex nerds, free shipping, 3 free DVDs, who knows what you're going to get, and a super secret gift. Lots of neat stuff. This week I was looking through at masturbation toys, and I saw, I have mentioned this before, but the head honcho at $27.95 is one of their top male masturbation sleeves. Really, when you're picking out a sleeve, you want to just look for a material and a look that's sexy for you. And you can even get an Adam and Eve vibrating silver bullet, any egg-shaped vibrator. Put it on the end and see if you like vibration, since vibration will transmit through the sleeve. For girl bits, there are a lot of different vibrators on the site. One that I thought was kind of neat, at only $24.95, is something called the Elite Climax Vibe. And it's purple, and it's a dual stimulating vibe, so it goes inside the body and outside. Real simple, and it has a removable bullet that has 10 different speeds and pulsations. So I thought that was a cool little design, got little nubbies on it. I was like, hey, that actually looks like some fun. So go to adamandeve.com, type in promo code sexnerd, and you're going to get that 50% off almost any item. Free shipping, 3 free DVDs, a super secret gift, and my gratitude. Promo code sexnerd. Okay, so now dates. Very important. First off, May 30th. If you remember Emily and Tim from the Hardcore Roleplay and Roleplay for Pervertibles episode, you'll remember that Emily runs the Center for Positive Sexuality, and she is hosting a fundraiser with Tasty Treats and Burlesque on May 30th. You can go to positivesexuality.org to learn more. That's going to be in the LA area. June 27th, I have mentioned this previously, the 100th episode live. It's going to be a storytelling show. I'm partnering with Dixie at Body Storytelling. It's basically the Moth for Pervs. And if you've ever been to a storytelling show where the focus is naughtiness, you know that there is lots of gasping and lots of giggling. So it's only $12. Doors open at 7. You can get the tickets. Well, I'll be tweeting the ticket link all this week, Sex Nerd Sandra Facebook page, at my website, bawdystorytelling.com. The link is there too. And please come on out. I would love to gather LA listeners and travelers in one place for major high fives and laughter. It would really warm my spirit, and it has been a crazy, crazy, wonderful ride with you guys. So can't wait to see you there. Also, I will be doing a podcast at the Woodhull Sexual Freedom Conference. That's September 21st in Washington, D.C. So look out for more East Coast dates around that time frame. And please, since that podcast will only be available to attendees, if you like to learn some cool stuff and hang out with sex-positive folks, come out to the Woodhull Conference. Okay, last off, resources. We're about to get into some masturbation fun. I love it. Jamie Waxman, a previous guest, she wrote a book called Getting Off, A Woman's Guide to Masturbation. Great book. Here's the thing. I mean, you can get that on Amazon. Love it. I don't know of a book or resource for male-bodied solo pleasure. I don't see one out there in the cosmos. If you know of a resource, let me know. Post it to the Sex Nerd Sandra Facebook page. Help me help you, help me help you, help us. Go team fun. Yay, naughty monkeys. All of the good stuff. Okay, enough of my babbling. Enjoy the show. I enjoyed doing it. I hope you enjoy listening to it.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra Podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Happy Masturbation May, guys.
Wee.
Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Hey, I've got comedian Mike Black in the studio.
Welcome me.
It's fake applause.
Yay. All my fans showed up for the podcast.
Mike and I have been friends for a while. We met through Elaine, who was on the show last year. And you're also the host of the Action Figure Podcast. You are wearing the shirt.
I am. I thought I'd plug it for the audience. that showed up today. And I do that show, and we do it like every other week, and it's on iTunes, and it's a lot of fun. It's comedians talking about action figures.
Sweet. I wasn't allowed action figures as a child, actually.
Come on. Why not?
I was socialized to be hardcore feminine. So
right.
I got dolls, and I got like fake food that I could serve up on little plates.
Instead, you were given an easy bake oven or
right.
something.
I didn't. I wanted G.I. Joe figures so bad, and I was not allowed.
See, to me, that would be more feminist to allow your daughter to have G.I. Joes and Barbies.
Oh, not
and
feminist.
Whatever.
Feminine.
Like, oh, feminine. Just, oh, okay. That makes more sense.
I don't think they weren't actively doing it. Like, they weren't actively like, you can't
like,
be a boy, but
this is a wife role.
Yeah.
And we're training you for that.
It just, I don't think they knew how desperate I was for some hardcore Gundam action figures. I don't think they knew.
Wow, if you knew about Gundam at that age, you were already 12 steps ahead of most of the boys I knew. But
I just wanted something where I could hit a button and it could like karate chop really hard.
Oh yeah, the Chuck Norris figures.
Yeah.
Those were wonderful.
Speaking of the up and down hand motion.
Yes. Which is funny because a lot of action figures, when you squeeze their legs, look like they're masturbating because of that hand motion.
I love it. So we haven't covered masturbation yet on the podcast.
That is shameful.
Yeah, a little over a year and a half. And haven't focused on it. So this episode, I've got Mike and I will be talking about our thoughts on the issue.
Right.
The political issue.
Called in an expert.
And then I also was up in, I just finished my San Francisco sex information training. So 60 hours of hardcore sex ed.
Hooray.
And while I was up there, I recorded with Carol Queen, who is a legend in the sex ed field.
Oh, that's awesome.
An extra passionate, huge cheerleader and the part of the group that started the Masturbate-a-thon.
Oh, wait, I know about this.
Yes.
Somewhat. This was like the public masturbation, right? Where like everyone got together and whacked off. Is that correct?
Right. I mean, the Masturbation Month had been around for a while. Okay. She'll explain it later in the episode. So I got a wonderful letter from a listener named Lo, and she wrote, and she really called me on my shit, but I appreciated it because it was so empowering. And this is what she wrote, okay? Hey, Sandra, I'm writing to you to really touch on one specific thing. You mention quite often that you have listeners that love your show and to learn about new techniques, but they don't have partners to explore it with. So true. That's me interjecting into the email. P.S. I'm one of those people, but here's a thing that I don't know if you get a lot, since being sexless is often something that weighs heavily on people's minds. Me, I'm okay, no fuss. But I wanted to stress to you that your show has vastly improved my masturbation sessions. And they were pretty good to begin with, P.S. Even as a teenage girl, I remember realizing that I didn't need other people to get off, and it delighted me. I think something that's very important to stress sometimes is that just because your orgasms are primarily from masturbation, it doesn't make you any more of a sad person. Intimacy is great, but stimulating your body is important, and it just kind of breaks my heart to know that there are people out there who feel like jerking off makes them pathetic. I know that you talk about masturbation a lot, and fantastically so, but I think there's a lot of the usual advice of masturbate to know your body so that it's better with a partner, which is absolutely true, but I wish that there were more of the masturbate because it's a lot of fun message out there, especially for women. Lo, thank you for that. That was, like, really invigorating for me to hear.
And that wasn't, like, too critical either. That was just, like, is a good thing to know that it's like, yeah, you're right. It should be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be practice for something else. It can just be fun in its own, you know. And I stopped practicing for other people while masturbating a long time ago because not out of sadness or anything. I was just like, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I'm just going to do this very selfishly in a weird sort of way just for me, because I figure it takes care of itself as far as being a practice aid. Don't you think? I don't know.
I don't know either. Mike, we're figuring this out together.
Oh, okay.
Wait a minute. Okay, well, I would say in my own experience, my personal masturbation habits will, I get into a habit so that when I am with a partner, I'm like, I have a really hard time masturbating or having an orgasm.
Okay.
Outside of what I'm used to when I'm alone.
Oh, see, that's interesting. Okay.
But of course, that's just my experience. I mean,
well, okay. What's funny is guys are coming from the other side of that, where it's when I masturbate, it can take quite a while. But sometimes if I really like a girl and we're having sex, it doesn't take very long.
Right.
So a lot of times when you're masturbating, you're practicing stamina and like staying power and making it take as long as possible. And like one of my friends even suggested, he was like, what you should do if you really want to get good at sex is masturbate with a condom on.
Okay, that is an amazing, yes.
And I was
yes.
like, that's a great idea, you know. I am too lazy for it, but it's a fantastic idea. I like the theory behind it. Yes.
I'm going to be doing a lot of personal shares and just sort of processing from my own point of view. But just the educator side of things, I have to just say for everyone, despite common belief, not everyone masturbates. There are the people.
Yeah.
There are people who are shocked, like that their friend, female or male, does not masturbate. And then there are people who are like, girls don't masturbate, or like, only boys that are this mas-. Like, people have all these assumptions.
Right.
Most people do. Not everyone does. Some people do it once a month. Some people do it once an hour. Everyone's different.
I knew a very lovely girl who, her and I were having an intimate conversation, and masturbation came up, and I talked about it. I was like, at the time, I was doing it like 3 times a day, something like that. And she goes, my God. And I was like, what? That's just being a guy. Is you have to do it a lot.
Totally.
It's part of it, so you don't go crazy, basically. And she goes, why don't you just have sex? And I was like, oh, you sweet, naive thing. The world would be so completely different if that were a possibility, you know?
Also, just FYI, lady from your past, like, dude, to actually, even if you were married, living with a person, it's a Saturday, you're both home.
Right.
You know, when I like being alone and just focusing on myself and not needing to focus on anything outside of my own sensations and brain. Like,
yeah.
That's kind of hot. And to like, and then they have to be in the mood, and then it's
it's a very large assumption that the other person is always going to be into it when you are,
right.
You know, and then you have to, on the flip side of that, always be into it when they are.
Yeah, it's, you know? There's no replacement to self pleasure.
This is the same person though who said, "I wish life was a musical," and not realizing that 99% of the time you're in the chorus.
That is a very good point. This is where I'm at in life, guys, right now. And I'm going to be just fully honest. And I'm like, I totally want to see if like what you think about this. But like as a budding adolescent, I could not figure out my body to save my life. Like I knew I was really turned on and I would rub like crazy, really dry. Chafing happened. I would get close. Like, I knew that something was building. But unless I used my family's back massager, I couldn't get off. And I thought I was broken for many years.
Right.
Then there was this glorious period in my early 20s where I finally like threw down the vibrators and was like, I need to figure this out. It took me like a good 3 hours.
So you were in your early 20s before?
No, 18. 17 or 18 is the first time I had an orgasm. Without a vibrator.
Oh, okay. That's not that crazy.
At least I could have orgasms.
Yeah. Because there's some people go their whole lives.
Yeah, not being able to, you know, tap into that.
Yeah.
So for me, there's this whole glorious period where I figured out my body enough to get to orgasm, knew like the body position. It's very Cirque du Soleil. Like I need like two or three things, lots of plate spinning like in the circus. And like, and for years I was able to get to orgasm really easily. And then by late 20s, I got really lazy again, got back on the vibrator train, and I've kind of been just not as...
Coasting.
Yeah, coasting, kind of like, vibrator time, turn it on, easy time. And so I miss that connection with my body that I used to have more intensely. Part of it is just career stuff. It's like you're talking about sex all the time, and I'm like, I don't know.
It becomes work.
But like, have you discovered that through your life, like there's just sort of a journey... In your masturbation?
Yes, actually. I think When I was younger, and partially it's going to be a generational thing, but porn was just not as accessible. And so you relied heavily on imagination. And so when I grew up, I had vivid, vivid scenarios about like some girl I knew at school or something like that and how it would all work out. And like, it was such like just ridiculous fantasy that would go on. But the orgasms ended up being much more intense because of it, because by the time it came to that, it was so vivid and so realistic and so personal. But now that porn is just everywhere and I'm on the internet all the time, it's like, now it's just when I want to masturbate, I just go on, find some cute girl doing something, you know, and then it's done.
Like cooking an omelet or something.
Like almost like that, yeah. It's very similar to a lean cuisine. To like, I could make a really fancy, nice meal for myself, or I could just microwave this and be done with it.
So porn is like fast food.
Very much so, yes.
I've wondered about this. Because, dude, before 150 years ago...
Yes.
I'm just picking a long ago time frame.
Back when there were unicorns and dragons and stuff.
Right.
I don't know history very well.
When it was still okay to wear fur.
Right.
I mean, people still masturbated.
Yes.
And they used their fantasies and were kind of just in tune with their bodies and did it.
Right. And we got great poetry and plays and stuff out of it.
Oh, yeah,
that's songs, you know.
So, I mean, I'm not knocking porn. I mean, it's handy.
Right.
I don't know. It just
But it's such a shortcut now.
It is a shortcut. It's almost like vibrators are a shortcut.
Right.
I hadn't really thought about it. I haven't, you know, this is the moment where we talk about it because it's been in my mind, but I haven't really fleshed it out.
Yeah.
What is that? That shortcut is helpful. It makes it more efficient.
Right.
Wait, have you lost that sense of fantasy and developing those inner stimuli? They're personal. I love that word personal that you use.
Yeah, well, because I think you really are taking something that could be really, really great and making it okay, you know? And it's like, this'll do. And it's like, for me, I always think of masturbation partially as kind of a release valve for, like, just the craziness of your life. You know, it's a good way to flush a lot of stuff out, literally, you know. But it could be so much more than that. It could be so much more fun and enriching, I guess, you know, than what I make it usually when it's like, you know, cheerleader college sex party. I'll just watch that and that'll be it, you know. And, you know, which has... I don't know anyone in that film, you know, I don't know them personally, I don't know anything about them really, but then I find what's funny is now, like, because now it's all like free everywhere, so you can watch pretty much anything, I've noticed without knowing it, have been looking for more intimate types of porn.
Ooh, like amateur stuff where people look like they're actually
like
in a relationship.
Like amateur stuff, or they'll have like an interview first. Where they'll, like, talk and, like, oh, how so-and-so got into porn.
She's into horses. And
it's like, oh, okay, so she thought she was ugly. That makes her cuter, you know, stuff like that. And, like, or it'll be, like, they have ones where it's fake, where it's POV.
Oh, right, where you feel like you're there.
Yeah.
And those are pretty hot.
I was like, that's pretty close to what I used to do, you know.
Oh my God, it really does. There is something like you're finding that you're craving a personal and connection with the people in the porn.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's not a new thing. I think there are like people that do like web stripping and stuff like that, like cam shows and stuff. And people send them letters and like fan requests and stuff like that. And it really is that. It's an attempt to make it a more personal connection.
Interesting. On the flip side, you know what I've noticed? Some of my friends, they'll say this. They're like, if I want to get off, I cannot think about the person that I have a crush on or I'm with because it's too personal and I have to think about something that is not related to my own life. I've heard people say that. I mean, it's not scientific. It's just something that I've heard.
No, that's an interesting thing. I tend to go the opposite. I'll like start out thinking, like a lot of times I'll start watching porn and be masturbating, but then as it gets closer to that time, I'll think about someone I've had an actual intimate connection with, you know?
I feel like fist bumping you about this, like blow it up, boom. Very satisfying. Because like there's like a Rolodex of fantasy about right. things that are erotic and I don't know, just like, what should I think about today? Like, oh, aliens. No. Yes? No.
Aliens?
I mean.
They're really not.
I don't want to talk about it.
Liar.
No, it's just, it can be. There's some good thoughts. The thing is that if it stays in your head, it's okay.
Like, right.
People freak out about their fantasies.
Yeah.
And have these weird.
What does it mean? That I wanted to fuck a Jawa.
Right, how can I be a feminist and still have this particular fantasy? Or I respect the people I'm with. Well, how can I do this? Or that is...
Yeah.
It's just in your mind.
Yeah.
And there's so many reasons why we find elements of a fantasy hot, but...
Right, and I think sometimes part of what makes a fantasy hot is knowing that it's never going to happen. Like, in your real life, mm-hmm. it's like, I'll never do this, and no one would even think that I would think of something like this, mm-hmm. and that's kind of hot, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Oh, you had mentioned, okay, so when we were like, let's talk about masturbation, you'd mentioned a trial and error period. Like, I just couldn't figure out my action to save my life. Like, did you go through that?
Yes, very much so, because when I was a kid, I don't want to talk about my family too much, but they were very much about, like, they almost hated being asked questions, so I learned everything on my own. Like, both of my parents worked for the government at different times, mm-hmm. so they were very defensive about most questions. So
wait, what does working for the government have to do with...
They're just very private people. They were just like... Like, I'd be like, what are you eating? And they'd be like, it's none of your business. You know, it's like...
Oh, that's so weird.
You know, and I'd be like, all right. And so I'll just go make myself something to eat and figure it out on my own. And so most of my life was kind of catch-as-catch-can, just in general. It was like, you figure it out on your own. And I had two brothers, but they were both very guarded about what they did. And so...
What an interesting family dynamic.
In a way, I think it made me smarter than I would have been. Like, if people were just telling me everything that I needed to know, I would have coasted, definitely, and just gone with that. But because I had to find most of the answers to everything on my own, it gave me a little bit more of an edge than I would have had.
Okay.
And so when it came to masturbating, there was no way. I was like, I'm not even going to broach this with anyone in the family, because... They're not going to tell me, and they're just going to make me feel weird anyway.
How about friends?
My friends were so stupid.
Oh.
Like any boys at that age.
They didn't catch like, if we catch like, catching can be caught. No,
I don't know what they did. I don't know what they caught. But we were all 11, and like, it was all guesswork. And so like, you would talk to your friends, and they'd be like, I think you just, beating off is you just beat it. Like, they really thought stupid things like that. And I was like, well, I'm not ready for that. And I was like, maybe later in life, I don't think I could take punching it. I'd been kicked in the nuts once.
Ooh.
And I was like, if that's what it takes to do whatever masturbating is, though, then I want no part of it. And so for a while, I thought it was that. Then eventually, I think it was through bathing, I kind of figured out, like, along the bottom of the shaft was really sensitive. And I was like, okay, there's something going on here that I like. But as it got more and more intense, I thought, I don't know if this is really supposed to feel like pain or pleasure. And maybe whatever it is, I'm just doing too much of it and I don't want to break it. So I really worried that I was going to break it for like a good 2 or 3 months. And I was just like, well, I better just leave it alone, you know? But you know, being a normal person, you start like just going after it anyway.
Yeah.
And then eventually I remember the film. I was watching Cinemax late at night, and it was a lesbian encounter in the film Fanny Hill.
Okay. Not familiar with that piece of not
starring
cinema.
Oliver Reed, oddly enough. It was like a weird 70s sort of porn, sort of plot movie. It was a very bizarre film. anyway, so when that happened, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to fight through it and just see what happens.
Fight through it. Fight through your penis.
Well, yeah, and like when liquid shot out, I was sure I'd broken it. I was like, oh no, I've totally destroyed my penis, and I didn't even know what it was for.
Okay, you're not the first person I've heard who had never been informed,
right,
that liquid comes out of the penis when you ejaculate.
Right. No, I had no idea. And it was clear. I remember that vividly. I was like, this is so crazy. And I was like, I knew it wasn't pee. And I was like, well, I have to keep this to myself and just live with the fact that I've broken my penis. I went for a good, like, week or so before I talked to one of my older friends, and they were like, no, it's cool. That you can do that as long as you want. Yeah. It's not going to kill you.
But did you feel pleasure when you broke it?
Yeah, it was. I was like, this is great, but what the fuck? Oh, it was a very. I really went through pretty much all the emotions and then all the stages of grief for my penis that I'd broken.
No.
So it was like, you know, it was a rough start,
Mike.
But it worked out. I'm fine now.
Well, yeah, you know, you made it to adulthood. Congratulations. Yeah. Dude. I mean, I have a little bit of anger about the fact that I didn't know that lube would make it feel better.
Oh, yeah. I just didn't figure that out. Saved me a lot of time, too, you know.
Yeah, I remember reading about sex, but not focusing on masturbation. Like, for some reason, you know, I mean, there's so much to know, but for some reason, I thought I was just broken. I didn't know that I was missing a piece of information that would have helped my sessions.
That's very much it. Yeah.
You think you know everything.
Similar place. Yeah. And I do remember shortly after that first time, all of that clicking.
Getting back to masturbation and lube. Do you have a preferred lube?
No, I don't. I use pretty much just aloe vera lotion.
Well, that's specific.
It's just because it's cheap. I don't have I'm aware of other fancy exotic lubes that work forever. And I can't be bothered to go get one of those. I do remember going through a lube period when I found out that was a good idea to start using lube. Mm-hmm. And I tried stupid things like toothpaste.
Oh my God.
Idiotic. It was maybe the biggest regret of my life was trying toothpaste. What is that?
So when I texted Mike, I was like, okay, we're going to do this podcast. And then I was like, I'll bring the lube. And you were like, LMAOBLT, whatever.
Yeah, whatever I said. Yeah.
Okay,
I didn't think you were actually going to bring lube. That's funny.
Oh, I was totally joking. I'm like, that'd be funny if I just brought lube. Okay, so I have a flavored lube on the table. This is a lube. Yeah, it's Sliquid Swirl in Blue Raspberry. And this...
What a great name.
Give it a whiff. I knew a guy who loved masturbating with that lube.
Is it like strawberry? Is that kind of the scent?
It's raspberry, but to me it smells and tastes like a Jolly Rancher.
Oh, it has a taste.
Yeah, go for it. And then I brought a masturbation lube, like a lube that's oil-based, like natural oil.
It is. It's very much like Jolly Rancher.
Yeah, and then
this
is a stroke oil that it's mainly, I think it's almond oil. Yeah, almond oil, coconut oil, grapeseed oil, like a lot of different oils, and then a little bit of silicone at the bottom.
What is the name of that one?
Stroke oil. Ride. It's called Ride.
Ride.
It has
a Western theme to it.
Yeah, totally. It's like, you're a man. It's like Marlboro man.
I wasn't supposed to eat
that. Oh, yeah, you're not supposed to eat that one. No, these are not all. No, that's just an oil. I mean, it's safe. It's safe.
It's fine.
But it's just like, if you feel it, I'm a total lube nerd, but
Yeah, this would be a good time. this would do it.
Well, okay, how do you compare that to aloe vera gel? Because aloe vera is kind of thick, and it's kind of very moist.
Yeah, this is a lot slicker. Mm-hmm. I think this would work better.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, because a lot of times with that, with the aloe vera, you have to keep reapplying, and that gets tedious. But I don't see that happening with this.
Oh, I see the reapplication. That's important.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm looking for that. Something that I
Which
noticed...
Which kind of takes you out of it, too. Have to go do this again.
I started with lotion, just straight up carry lotion, which is like a high mineral oil content.
Yeah.
So bad for female bodies.
Like, oh, is it really?
Yeah, don't rock the baby oil, really. It's generally not a good idea. But
good to know.
Some people like love this friction. The oil to me, there's this, this friction to it, but it's still moist.
Yeah, and there's a warmth to it.
Now I want to try aloe vera gel. I've never tried that.
It's nothing to write home about. You can give it a shot. But
there is organic aloe vera lube. That's 99% just aloe vera.
Organic.
Yeah. It's
I never thought about it.
Aloe Cadabra is the brand. They sell it at like health food stores now.
I would give it a try just off the title. Because it makes it sound magical. Aloe Cadabra.
Poof. You broke your penis. This is a universal sign for masturbation. Just like
the weird puppet mime dance.
Right. I use the jerk off motion only for when I'm mad at something, like, ugh. Ooh, that's kind of sex negative. Oh, man. Anyway.
It is true. That was a big thing in the 80s. Was
the jerk off
move. The jerk off move. Yeah.
Like, lame.
I remember most of the 80s comedies, someone did that at some point.
Did you used to feel like negative or like shameful about the fact that you masturbated?
No. She steals the lube back.
It's mine.
I never really felt negative or shameful, but I didn't really bring it up all that often. You know, like I, like the rest of my family, I just kept things to myself.
Right.
And so it wasn't until like a couple years later, I was at like a middle school sort of party or something. And someone brought up masturbating, and I was like, well, everyone masturbates. And, like, you could hear, like, the needle skip in the room of, like, these, you know, kids that aren't really ready to broach that subject. And they're all like, no, we don't. And I was like, oh, okay, sorry. I'm going to go get some punch and leave this weird, awkward room.
Yeah.
So that was the first time I felt any sort of, like, shame about it. But when I left the room, I was like, fuck those guys, it's great.
Right.
So I don't know.
Well, way to go.
It was kind of shame, but at the same time I was like, I'm still gonna masturbate later, so I don't care what you guys think.
But also it's like, okay, come on, I know some of you just aren't ready to acknowledge that in a public forum.
It was kind of funny, there was like an instant sort of like polygraph that went off because a lot of kids turned like bright red when I said that.
Aww.
And they were like, are we gonna have to admit this now?
Right, and you're not
so
to be
I
like
just dropped it and left. I was like,
who's going to be mature enough to be like, you know, this is a topic I'm not quite ready to broach in a group yet.
That never happens at 13 or 14.
No.
There's never that kid. And I wasn't going to be like, back me up, Paul, you know, or anything like that, you know.
Aw.
Poor Paul. There was no Paul, by the way.
There is something shocking about, like, I remember, like, I didn't necessarily feel shameful about it, but the awareness that maybe I'd been loud and someone had heard was like, oh crap, I gotta be quiet. A partner even walking in, like when I lived with one of my partners, like he came in the middle and I just was like sitting down in the bed like, it's fine, everything's fine. And, like, it was something about the being discovered that was really uncomfortable.
Have you ever been caught by a partner?
Like, I think 5 minutes into sitting on the dildo that I had been using and like just talking like it was normal, I was finally like, I have to just, you got me.
Like, yeah. There's no excuse that works.
It was like a
that.
Magic trick, like pulling out his toy, and he's like, whoa!
I was practicing for a talent show. That's, you know.
Because
I think it's different for girls in that regard, where like if a guy catches a girl masturbating, he's pretty cool with it. But I've had an experience where a girl caught me masturbating and considered it cheating.
Because of the use of audiovisual material, or just because you were pleasuring outside?
Yeah, I was just pleasuring myself. I was in the bathroom, and I was like, she's asleep. She doesn't want to do anything, probably, because I'm not going to wake her up. Went to the bathroom. She came in, honey, what the hell? And was like mad, and I was like, well, you were asleep. She's like, but you're cheating. And I was like, I was thinking of you. I wasn't at all, but I lied and said I was.
No, though, that just brings up a whole thing around, you know, the feeling of ownership around someone else's sexuality, and what does it mean if someone's finding sexual pleasure outside of your genitals or oral areas. And
it's such a weird thought that, like, I bet no one's ever put it into those words of, like, at a bar, what's the problem? She's finding sexual pleasure outside of my genitals. I would love to hear that guy's story who explained it all like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's, well, that's definitely a topic for a future podcast. It's definitely, and I love that we brought up fantasy and you know, that uncomfortable feeling that people have sometimes when they find a partner.
Yeah.
In that situation. Oh, so many things. Okay. So we've been talking for a while. I really enjoyed processing a little bit.
Like, I did too. This was fun.
Mike, we're like better friends now.
We are.
Oh man. So where can everyone find you out in the world of the internet and et cetera?
Oh, on Twitter, I'm at Mike Black Attack, and the same on Facebook. And then my website is mikeblackattack.net.
Well, thank you so much for coming out.
Thanks for having me.
And Nodding Monkeys, enjoy my interview with Carol Queen. Yay! Hi, Carol.
Hi, Sandra. This is so exciting. I haven't been on your show before.
I'm really excited right now. I just came from 8 hours of SFISI training, San Francisco Sex Information Training. Came right over here to the Center of Sex and Culture.
That's a kind of a San Francisco Sunday afternoon kind of a thing, isn't it? You couldn't ever do that anywhere else.
Totally. And I texted you because it's Masturbation May. And who better to talk to than Carol Queen? Hello, Carol.
Hello. Yes, I am one of the group who founded National Masturbation Month. So hopefully I know it all.
I'm bummed because I don't get to be here next week for the Masturbation-a-thon. The Masturbate-a-thon.
The Masturbate-a-thon, right.
Okay.
Right.
What is the Masturbate-a-thon and why does it exist?
Okay, so the Masturbate-a-thon was originally the keystone part of National Masturbation Month, which Good Vibes put together in 1995 when Surgeon General Joycelyn Elders got fired for saying one tiny little sensible thing about educating about masturbation. And Good Vibes people looked at each other and went, "We're horrified. How can this possibly be?"
Right.
People are more screwed up about this issue than we thought. And we cooked up National Masturbation Month. And then a few years later, we tried to add something every single year. A few years later, it was the Masturbate-a-thon, which in the Good Vibes world version was you go around to appropriate people and you get pledges like you would at a walk-a-thon or a bike-a-thon. Only you masturbate, but you do it by yourself or maybe with your partner. And then you let the people know how much pledge money they should remit, send it all into Good Vibes, and they would pick out two or three charities and send all that money on to the charities. The Center for Sex and Culture got a hold of it and made it live and a group event when one after the other shock jock DJ and radio people asked me, "Can I be the judge? Can I be the judge? I'll come out to San Francisco. I'll be the judge." And like, well, it's not really something you can judge. And then we thought,
why not?
Why not? We could do that. We could do that. And so we did.
And the next one is a week from now, because this is coming out on Wednesday near the end of May this year.
May 25th. And in the past, we've done long, long masturbate-a-thons that involve people trying to break the world record, but that's getting close to 10 hours long. And we have had a really intense winter and we didn't have the infrastructure to try to do a 10-hour event this time. So it's going to be a 4-hour long event. And if people want to try to break that record, they're going to need to do it at home. People don't lie. You know, mostly people lie and say they don't masturbate. So we're not too worried that people are going to say they lie and they do masturbate. You're not winning a lot of money or anything like that. It's just all on the honor system. But if people do masturbate for longer than 10 hours, we would like to hear from them because we want to acknowledge how fabulous they are and focused.
That's a lot of hand cramping.
You look a little worried, actually.
I'm getting very furrowy right now with my eyebrows.
You're thinking, wouldn't people get sore? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I think that some people have an advantage because of their method of masturbation. They might, you know, be able to get in there for the long haul.
Right. So people ask, what does it take to masturbate for 10 hours? And the first thing is you need to focus. You need to want to. It's like a cross between an athletic event and going into a meditative zone, right? I mean, when people masturbate, especially for very long, it can get pretty meditative, right?
It's like chess boxing.
Yeah, I guess. No, I have never done that. So I'm not sure how much it's like that, but
physical activity and then focus of the mind.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, when you stop and think about it, any sexuality could be that way. Most people think about like worrisome things and get in the way of their own response, but you can also use your brain in pro-sexual ways, and that would make a difference. So the people who win are mind giants of some kind. I've got to say, plus they go slowly. You can't be going super fast for 10 hours. That indeed does cramp the hand and wear skin away in places that you want to keep your skin intact. That would be rough. And usually they use plenty of lube and the kind that works really well for their body. So lube, people, it's all about the lube.
Chafe prevention. That's important. Right. But we don't have to masturbate for 10 hours to benefit from the joys of masturbation.
By no means do we have to take that long. I mean, any amount of time that you feel as though you've gotten a chance to go through the sexual response cycle, kind of lose the world for a minute. One of the reasons I think that relaxation is part of masturbation is because when you get into the sexual response cycle and get up near orgasm and have an orgasm, you're not thinking about the mortgage and you're not thinking about whether you fed the cat. You're thinking about, if anything, erotic things, or your brain has joined the stars. You know, you're out in the ether, and molecules are floating all around and careening and bumping into each other, and it's awesome. And it takes you away. It's like your own personal vacation, which is why I think why the French call it the little death. It's not death, but it certainly isn't being immersed in the minutiae of life, the stressy minutiae of life. So it's one of the really good reasons to masturbate. If people need a reason, which I hope that your listeners don't, because it's fabulous all by itself. It's pleasurable. It's lovely. Who wouldn't? Our arms are just that long. They reach most of us. They reach the perfect direction and the perfect distance, most of us.
I mean, of course, there are some people who aren't interested in masturbation. But the thing that concerns me are the people that do masturbate and feel bad about it or want to but don't or feel guilt after. You know, there's those flushes of negative feelings.
Right, right. So most people either come to masturbation out of sort of this vacuum of information. You just all of a sudden find parts of your body that feel really nice when you touch them a certain way for a certain duration, and you think you invented it, and you're like, this is cool. I can't wait till I tell my friend. And they're like, oh my God, my mother told me not to do that. Or the other place you come from often is from this space of shame because somebody's caught you and slapped your hand or said, no, don't you ever do that. Or your friends teased you and said, that's second best. You really should be with a person or whatever. I think in Western culture in particular, one big sort of shame point about masturbation. You know, everybody knows about kids getting shamed about sex and sexuality. That's, everyone has either had something like that happen to them or a friend or something.
It's a cliche soundbite by now.
It is. And it that makes it sound like I'm minimizing what harm it can cause. It can cause terrible harm. It can affect somebody's sexuality and sex life their whole life long. So it's not a small deal. But I think we don't talk as much about the fact that people shame each other about this. Oh, you can't get anybody. You know, you have to masturbate. And partner sex and masturbation happen to share some nerve endings and some responses, but they're not the same thing. One is not a substitute for the other one. They're both part of somebody's erotic possibility range. And as you pointed out, some people don't masturbate or don't want to. And, you know, there are asexual folks who just never feel the desire. People who really do focus on sex with a partner, and that's their thing. Although some research has indicated that, especially for women, and I love this because it's so counterintuitive in certain ways, especially for women, people who are in a relationship, a sexually satisfying relationship, may masturbate more than other people because eroticism begets eroticism, I think.
I like that number.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know what the number is, but it feels like numbers.
It does. And you know, I think back to times when I was sort of newly in the compersion and limerence and, oh, this is hot, of new crush or new relationship. And yeah, man, I barely had time to go to work. I was masturbating so much when I wasn't with the person I was into. So I think there's something to that for some people. And I also think that there's a way in which When we release ourselves from this set of expectations about masturbation and what it really means to do it, and just let ourselves go into the space of exploration that it provides us, it not only gives us information about partner sex, which is, you know, we hear that a lot. You learn more about your responses, then you can tell your partner, and then you're more likely to be orgasmic with your partner, and that's cool. That's not bad. Of course, that's not bad. But it's also so valuable just to learn what your own responses are yourself. It's a form of self-care. The Chinese euphemism for masturbation translates to self-comfort.
Aww.
Isn't that wonderful? And of course, the Western etymology of masturbation is to pollute with the hand or some terrible thing like that.
Is that what masturbation translates to, roughly?
From back in the day, yeah, from the original root languages. And that is so – that just tells you people have had a bad attitude about this for centuries.
Right. Well, I mean, and certain origins of circumcision and
– yeah.
What the Kellogg's – cornflake? The cornflake.
The cornflake guy, Graham.
Wait, no, Graham Cracker.
Graham Cracker and also the Kellogg cornflake guy.
Same guy?
Yeah. No. Two different foodstuff-based anti-masturbation, anti-crazy sex, don't eat too much meat, don't eat spicy food.
All the ways that we've tried to stop ourselves from getting randy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Food. And I just hope the vegans listening to this are going, hey, that is an insult. We too are sexy and randy, we vegans, even if we don't eat meat or, of course, plenty of vegans eat spicy food.
Is that a thing?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's just this notion at that moment in history when they were promoting these cereal-based diets was that it would sort of tamp down the fires, and that if people didn't eat, if for some reason, they were anti-eating meat. But not for the same reason that vegans are, of course. So I see. This is how rumors get started. I shouldn't have even brought that up.
Well, I think that it's interesting to see where things come from. I mean, my own experience with masturbation is no one ever said anything about masturbation, right, ever. And as a female-bodied human on this earth, I didn't know how to operate myself.
Right.
I knew stuff felt good. Could not have an orgasm to save my life because I had no idea how to operate my goods.
Me too. Seriously? Me too. Yes, me too. In high school, I kind of figured out what masturbation was. I kind of got, you know, like reading articles in magazines and things. Mm-hmm. This is how I got my 411 at that point. No scientific books, no nothing. But when the time came to get up there and have an orgasm, I would get stuck. I would just get stuck. And so I was like a non-orgasmic masturbator. Isn't that depressing? But I think that's probably true of a fair number of people, especially young women, you're right, before they get the manual sorted out in their mind. And part of the reason for that is this is like a Mr. Science thing from Robert.
Ooh.
You know, Robert specializes in anatomy and sex and pleasure. My partner Robert.
Dr. Robert Lawrence.
Right, thank you. And one day we were sitting in the bathtub and talking about masturbation and orgasm, you know, like you do.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally.
And I said, so here's what I want to know. I want to know why I can come easily now, but it was so hard for me to come when I was younger.
Yeah, why?
Why? He said, because the nerve pathways actually grow to facilitate the response that you learn to have once you get it right. You know, as you don't just start throwing a softball properly and hitting what you throw. You don't start, you know, tatting a doily like your grandma can. Well, I don't know about my grandma could tat awesome doilies. Anyway, you don't just knit or tat or do, you know, fine handwork. You don't.
It's muscle memory.
It's muscle memory. And that has to do with nerve pathways growing from where the extremity that's doing the work or the part of the body that's experiencing the sensation. And then the little nerves will grow and they'll hook up with the spine. They'll go up to the brain. The brain will go, oh, clearly some stuff's going on down there in that part of the body. Let's pay some attention to that. You literally teach yourself a response, which is one of the reasons that it's a good idea not to masturbate too fast, because you're teaching yourself to come fast. And you know, we know many guys have issues with what is sometimes called premature ejaculation, which is ridiculous. If it's the amount of time they want it to take, it's not premature. But if they want to last longer And they've masturbated fast, as young people say. They went into the bathroom, locked the door, and the brother started pounding on the door.
Right. It's about how much control, or how much do you want to be able to control your right? sexual functioning in a relationship.
And those people can mindfully start masturbating slower, like our 10-hour friends at the Masturbate-a-thon, maybe not quite that long, but slower, slow down. People get into a loop, and you can break that loop, but you have to do it. You have to decide to. And then don't just do it once and go, well, that didn't work. No, do it. Do it. Do it for a while. Make it into a practice, and then see how your response changes.
What do you think about the relationship between fantasy and porn and masturbation? Like, the fact that you're not, I mean, you're with yourself. Like I found just in, because, you know, like, are you ever by yourself as a sex educator and, like, mm-hmm. doing something with yourself and, like, getting into, like, like sex nerd mode where you're doing it for the science? You're like, no.
All the time.
But at the same time, it's like, no, let me just connect with myself and not make this a learning experience.
Sure.
That's one of my personal things. I'm like, stop learning. Just do it. But the fact that just being present in the sensations and not necessarily experiencing going into fantasy or bringing up pictures or videos. Right. It's very challenging.
It can be really challenging, especially if you're used to going into fantasy mode, or, I mean, basically that's one of the elements that you will have worked into your own pattern, right? Everybody's got their pattern, and they're not all, probably no two are exactly the same. You know, we're little snowflakes in our sexuality and our masturbation patterns and our responses. And that's one of the reasons why. And so you kind of do have to go mindful to, and not, and I don't mean squirrel on a wheel mindful. I don't mean monkey mind mindful. I mean the opposite kind. The sex therapists call it sensate focus, to take yourself out of your brain, whether you're going to fantasy mode, which for many people is exactly what they need to do to be able to ramp themselves up in terms of their sexual response and their ability to orgasm. Fantasy is a fabulous, some people call sexual arousal and orgasm the mating of fantasy and friction. And that, you know, that really makes some sense. That's tweetable, isn't it?
Fantasy
and friction.
That's a book title. That's a movie. That's lots of things.
It's a course, yes. Although some people, of course, don't need friction. Some people can think themselves off. But that's a horse of another color. I mean, that's sort of automatically masturbation, I guess. It's an unusual variant. But the thing about sensate focus is that you just seek around your body with your mind and figure out the places where the sensation is notable, different, something that you want to put your consciousness into. Maybe you're not thinking, my clit feels so whatever right now, huge, swollen, tender, slippery, whatever it is. Maybe you do want to think that. That might be great. Maybe you're paying attention to the fact that your musculature has gotten tense. That's part of many people's sexual response cycle. Your toes are curling or stretching out like chicken toes, you know. That's how you can tell if it's a real orgasm on some people or a fake one. Or looking at the sex flush and different things to see whether or not somebody is way up in their arousal cycle. So those things make a difference. But the other kinds of things that make a difference are paying attention to your breathing. A lot of times people get out of their head by going into real conscious awareness of breathing and trying to slow their breathing down or deepen it quite a lot. Some people, conversely, now Betty Dodson doesn't like this, but I do it myself. So I probably have admitted it to her at some point or another. I hold my breath. And I think a lot of people do that too. Mm-hmm. That makes a Valsalva response in your upper chest.
Valsalva?
Which is one of the things that happens in some yoga. And
I don't know what this is.
I don't know a whole lot more. Oh. I can't explain it very much better than that, but it's a pressure in the chest phenomenon that affects your neurology. It affects the way you sense things.
Okay. Like, does it wake your body up a bit?
In my experience, it has become part of my higher arousal state, that if I'm way up there, if my breath stops going in and out, then the pressure in my chest, in my lungs changes, and that's part of my arousal pattern. But for some people, it would be weird. to do that. They wouldn't, you know, they are deep breathers. They're deep and rhythmic breathers, and that would just feel completely unnatural and strange to them. Right. So, you know, we're just also different.
Right. Or like, some people might hold their breath as a sign of tension.
Right.
And they need to breathe. And some people need to speed up their breath to like get into higher
fire breath. Sometimes called fire breath. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. And what fire breath would do, and deep breathing too, and these will do sort of the same thing in two different ways with really different sensations associated with them is get more oxygen into your blood.
Yeah.
And oxygen, of course, is a big part of what you need to do any kind of distance running, whether it's running down the track or the road or running toward orgasm, lying flat on your back. And speaking of lying flat on your back, another thing that Betty Dodson wants me to say, since I'm talking about masturbation, is she really, really recommends. And for all you people out there who don't always come when you want to, this is a great suggestion, I think. She really recommends that you not just lie flat, but that you move your hips. Do a certain amount of pumping of the hips or thrusting, whatever, however you think of it. And that kind of unlocks the musculature and helps sensation flow. It helps with blood flow. And blood flow is a huge part, of course, also of arousal and orgasm.
Yeah. Betty Dodson's, do people call her the mother of masturbation?
Sometimes, although I feel sure that masturbation did exist before she was born, but she's done a lot for it in the 20th and 21st centuries.
Oh, man. I'd love to meet her. She's in New York, right?
She's in New York. Yeah. Next time you go to New York, tell me. I'll try to put you in touch with her. That would be great.
Oh, yeah.
That would be great. The world wants you two to talk.
Do you have a hookup with Dr. Ruth?
You know what? I'm trying to find a hookup for Dr. Ruth. Somebody's trying to put Dr. Ruth in a documentary, and I'm like, where is Dr. Ruth right now? I don't have a link up for her.
I just want to give her a little hug. Oh, that's really inappropriate, probably, but she'd probably.
You know what? I bet many people have wanted to give Dr. Ruth hugs in her time. Yeah. There's a possibility that she really values that. I don't know. I can't speak for her.
I'm just excited. I don't know. I'm just excited, period. There's so much. Okay. Now, I just jumped in and was all like, masturbate-a-thon, and let's talk about sex and masturbation and alone time. And I love everything you're saying. We haven't really talked about you.
Okay.
And I'm probably going to partner this with something beforehand. Mm-hmm. But like, I just see you, as many educators do, as kind of like an icon of sorts. And you're giving me that little smile.
Aw, thank you.
Well, shucks. You're welcome.
Shucks.
I mean, you and your partner created the Center for Sex and Culture,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't been here before. It's fantastic.
It was a treat to see you walk around the room going, look at all these books. Oh, yeah.
I just had Charlie Glickman on talking about prostate play, and he stayed at my home, and he was talking about all the books I had, because I have books on the floor in front of my bookcase, like so many sex books. And so to see your center's collection is kind of hot.
Do you want to know something insane? We thought when we started the center that we would be emptying the bookshelves at home and bringing them over so that everybody could pay attention to the books that we had, enjoy them, whatever. They're still at our house. These are all donated by other people.
No way. It's amazing.
When we stated that we were going to start to collect, people did spring cleaning like crazy, and they were like, I wanted to give these some place where they would do some good. So I feel so glad about that.
No, it's incredible. I don't know if there are any, I mean, I'm sure there are a few libraries like this in the world.
Actually, no.
No?
There really are not. There, as far as we know, we are the largest publicly accessible sex library. There are good, solid, maybe even bigger than ours collections in certain university library systems. But you can't necessarily just stroll in off the street and sit down there and start to read books. There are some private collections. We don't know if any are bigger than ours. But in terms of walking in off the street and saying, I want to look at some sex books today, we don't know of any that's bigger than ours or even very many that do that at all. The New York Public Library's got a lot of sex books, though. I'll say that for them. We love those guys. For people who are in New York, I hope they know what a wonderful library they have.
Oh, fantastic. Wait, so you've got the center.
Mm-hmm.
You've written Exhibitionism for the Shy.
Right.
Being shy and not sure if I'm an exhibitionist,
I appreciate that you wrote that book.
Thank you.
Can you give me a little bit more about, like, some noteworthy moments in your career that you're especially like, this happened, and I really enjoyed that, and God, I hated that part.
Well, I can tell you, probably the most important moment in my whole career, besides meeting Robert, which was both a personal and a career thing, because that was amazing. Robert and I were, you said you'd been to SFSI today, and Robert and I were on the training staff at SFSI, and Robert was there for all through the 80s, and I joined in 1989. And for the next few years, Robert and I were the training coordinators there. And so we worked together there and together all over the place from
when
then
did,
on.
When did you two meet?
We met in 1989, just before my first SFSI training, which was in the spring. We met through the Jack and Jill Off organization. So the fact that we do the Masturbate-a-thon now is sort of a return home to our roots. That's where we got together. Actually, a friend introduced us, and then we started doing Jack and Jill Offs together and got together there. So the other really important connections that I made were Betty Dodson, also around that time when I started at the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality, which is where my doctorate is from.
This is a P.S., guys. This is all in San Francisco.
Yeah, all in San Francisco. You have to come to San Francisco to, like, hang in these particular communities, although many communities since that time, the development of sex communities around the nation has been amazing. At the time that we were the biggest sex community, I'm sure, in many ways around maybe we still are, but there are places everywhere where there are sexuality-related communities and groups, organizations, all kinds of things. It's been amazing to see the last 20 years of burgeoning, actually, in the U.S. around sexuality, U.S. and elsewhere. So meeting Betty Dodson, really, really important. And through Betty Dodson, I met Joni Blank. Really, really important, because that's how I got my job at Good Vibrations. It's through Joni at a Betty Dodson masturbation workshop. Great way to meet your boss. You know, pretty much it's all on the table after that. And at that time, Joni still met, or still ran Good Vibrations. And then the other two things that I immediately thought of when you asked me that question were going to China with Robert to do a train the trainers around a group of people who was developing with funding from the Ford Foundation to the women got together because they wanted to translate our bodies ourselves into Chinese, which they subsequently did.
Oh, wow.
And male sexologists and doctors and just the usual suspects got together because they didn't want the women to be having this amazing project that didn't have any sort of male, of course, our bodies ourselves is male relevant, but not some men don't know that. And so they put together an organization to kind of create something for men that was comparable.
Oh, really? Wait, so Our Bodies Ourselves is a comprehensive sex and sexual health guide for women.
Right.
There's been several editions, but it's
goes back to 1973, I think.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's 40 years old this year, something like that. Yeah. And was started by the Boston Women's Health Collective, and they're still there. They're online now. I just talked to them a year ago. It's been translated into about a jillion languages. It's really, it's an amazing book. People, if they don't know it, should check it out. If
Carol
wants to know about bodies, especially female-bodied bodies, Our Bodies Ourselves is a great place to start.
Fantastic. I love that you have such a fire for and passion for sex ed and erotic identity. And what did your website said? Each person's own unique sexual profile. That's right. What you want to empower people to find that.
Right. I really want people to understand that there's not one normal. This is the worst thing that could happen in our culture is for people to think that there's one way to be sexual. There is not. There are multiple ways to be sexual. There are many ways to be turned on, to feel erotic, to experience your eroticism, and to experience your identity around that. Not everybody identifies with their sexuality exactly, but many people do. And it's very important to them. And it's the main way they find community, partners, a way to understand themselves, like and unlike others. And, you know, we all have something, I think, that we identify around. And sexual identity has been the thing that has been mine and that I am most known for exploring and trying to understand. And I think that I've been doing a a talk lately called 7 Billion Sexual Orientations, because I really want people to get it that, you know, we have a really binary understanding of sexual orientation in the West. It's gay or straight. It's either or, male, female, good, bad, black, white, night, day. You know, we're really binary thinkers in many ways. And this is all a spectrum. It's you can't talk about sexuality and gender identity unless you think about a spectrum. And I really want people to understand that what you do and want sexually is not It doesn't change based on what your sexual orientation is. Gay or straight only means the gender of the people that you want to do sexual things with. It doesn't say what sexual things you might want to do right. or not do. So I just I feel sort of evangelical about all that. That's part of where my fire comes from, I think.
Do you ever kind of just like, no, I no more sex right now. Like, let me go home and watch, you know, a game show or something. Like,
I thought you were going to say Game of Thrones. Yeah, but that's full of sex too. So, you
right,
know,
I was going to say Game of Thrones, and I'm like, I'm actually a really big fan of Game of Thrones yeah. right now. So yeah. I was like, so now that's another obsession. So I'm like, calm down, Sandra.
Well, I think that I had this really interesting conversation with my ex-girlfriend, who was a really important person in my life. She's the person, if I have to thank any one person for making me comfortable about masturbation, it's her.
Really?
Because I made myself as comfortable as possible through books. But the human being that I first was with, who was like, masturbation's awesome, it was her, my ex, whose pseudonym that she has chosen for purposes of me talking about her is Natalie. She named herself after Natalie Barney, the fabulous lesbian in the roaring 20s. In Europe, who was a great organizer and lover of women. So Natalie said to me after I came to San Francisco and started my sexology work and was working at Good Vibes and doing sex work and everything. I was like doing all kinds of stuff. She was like, you know, I could see if sex was your hobby. I could see if it was your business. But with you, it's everything. I was like, well, yeah, I think it kind of is. And part of that has to do with how limited I felt in terms of community and information for so many years of my young life, you know, that when I finally came to San Francisco and I could jump in the deep end, it was so exciting and so validating for me to be able to do that. The other piece of it was that I don't think sex is one thing at all. When I think about sex, you know, 27 hours a day, it's not the same. It's not the same thing from hour one to hour 27. Not at all.
It's all the things.
So many different things. You know, it's culture, it's society, it's communication, it's psychology, it's everything. And you can't just say, oh, sex is all the same. Hardly. Anybody who thinks sex is all the same, go out and have some more, read some more books, or pay closer attention. It changes all the time.
The discoveries are inexhaustible.
Pretty much. And that makes perfect sense because, you know, people ask me what sexology is. I try to explain it to people. It's the simple answer is it's the academic study of sexuality.
Yes.
But that's a little too simple. And really what's more informative is saying that it's an interdisciplinary study, that virtually every discipline that we can think of that deals with anything else in culture has something to say or offer to or learn from about sexuality, you know, law and biology and psych and soc and communications and the arts. And you can just go on and on and on. I can barely think of anything that you couldn't major in the university and minor in sexuality within it. I would, you know, some years ago I would have said, oh, I don't know, computer science. But now clearly computer science and sex, the Venn diagram is very large.
You know, I've never really thought about this, but you saying that, it feels like, you know, think like you pull from all these different disciplines
yeah.
to add to the wealth of knowledge in sexology. However, also unifying all that in sexology also helps you unify humanity and the understanding of all the disciplines in one place. Like, it's a wonderful study of people.
I think there are other ways. I mean, there must be other endeavors and other things that are of concern to humans that you could say are as interdisciplinary as and multidisciplinary as sexuality. But I don't know what they would be right off the top of my head because I go right to sex, of course.
Well, I think like in terms of needs, sex, food, shelter,
sure.
the basics.
Yeah.
Spirituality.
And then you go, up the hierarchy of need and you get to self-actualization and your sort of creativity and things like that. I mean, there's a place for sexuality in every step of the way.
Yeah, I feel like masturbation is part of the path to self-actualization. And the problem lies when there, something is keeping you, like, kind of dividing you from yourself. Like, you need to access yourself from another person. Or for some reason, there's something in the way from just being with yourself and comforting yourself. Because it's a part of just basic self-regulation to be able to soothe.
You know, I think that, besides self-soothing, besides self-pleasuring, you know, the good things it does for menstrual cramps and prostate health and all the things that you can say, there's something really basic about, I want to spend time with myself in this lovely way, because plenty of people don't want to spend any time with themselves at all. You know, they want to go out and get a partner. They want to be with friends all the time. They can't be alone. And there's something so grounding and self-nurturing about just being able to enjoy yourself being alone. And I would just say to people who don't like to be alone, this is actually a really good way to get connected to how it can be wonderful to be by yourself. You yeah. get to focus on whatever your thing is. I always talk about partner sex as a wonderful distraction. Sometimes, let's face it, it's not a wonderful distraction. It's not optimal. But when it's good, it's fabulous. But it also distracts so many of us from being able to actually take the path toward high arousal and orgasm, because there's another person in the room. Sometimes it's counterintuitively hard if you're with the person that is the most dear to you, the biggest turn on the whole world. Sometimes it can be harder to come with that person than it can with a stranger or by yourself. And that's another reason why orgasm is, you know, a fabulous thing that we can have in our bag of tricks for when we've got a weekend off, all by yourself, long bath, you know, rose petals in the water, couple candles, get out the vibrator, get out the lube, whatever it is that you use. I think there's an argument to be made for understanding that as a fundamental kind of self-care.
Oh, that was a beautiful ending note. Oh, I feel things. Carol Queen, where can people find you out in the world? Books you've written? Center's website.
My interesting frozen in time, hopefully to be moved into the future someday soon, website is carolqueen.com. It hasn't been added to lately, but it's got a lot of stuff on there anyway, so we're going to try to get it unstuck. Center for Sex and Culture is at sexandculture.org. People can send me sex questions at the Good Vibes website, goodvibes.com. Go down the left-hand toolbar, and there's an Ask the Doc or Ask Our Sexologist or however they have me linked on there. And the Masturbate-a-thon has its own Tumblr, which is linked off sexandculture.org.
Ooh.
So people can go and look at that. If people want to read my stuff, they want to look at maybe Exhibitionism for the Shy or Real Live Nude Girl, Chronicles of Sex Positive Culture, which is my essays. Pomosexuals is another book that is co-edited by me and that I love very much. It fights the binary bias in sex and gender, and it's a set of personal essays. And The Leather Daddy and the Femme is my erotic novel.
Oh, I've heard really good things about that.
I'm so glad to hear that. I've done a bunch of other edited stuff and some short fiction and Best Bisexual Erotica with the late Bill Brent. But my next thing is probably going to be another book, something like Real Live Nude Girl with essays. And I really, really, really want to, I'm just going to say this on your show so that it'll really, really come true. I really want to do a collection of personal essays by people who were influenced by the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, good one.
Yeah. We can talk more about that another time. Don't dream it, be it, people. That's my middle name.
Well, I'm sex nerd Sandra, and we often say go team fun on the show, but this is the episode where be team fun with yourself.
That's right. Anybody can be team fun wherever they are.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Sandra.